Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Coming up in today's edition of Africa Link, world leaders, including the UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, are in Addis Ababa to find ways of ending global poverty and manage climate change.
I urge world leaders and ministers gathered here this week exercise flexibility and compromise in favor of working together for the common well-being of humanity.
Zimbabwean writers react to the death of Chenjerai Hove, a renowned Zimbabwean author and outspoken critic of President Robert Mugabe.
Very jovial, lots of humor. That's Chenjerai for you.
I was part of his group and we would read to one another, and that remains permanent on my mind.
And Zambia drops criminal charges against controversial singer Pilato. These stories plus cinema in a backpack, how a South African entrepreneur is bringing the movies to those who can't afford the silver screen. Good morning and welcome to Africa Link with me, Crispin Mwakideu, in Bonn.
Top story.
Let's begin in Addis Ababa. Ethiopia's capital is this week hosting the UN Summit on Development Financing. The meeting aims to find ways of ending global poverty and manage climate change by 2030. In a moment, we shall be hearing from Addis Ababa, but to start us off, I've been speaking to Owen Bader, a development economist with the Centre for Global Development in London, to find out how the outcome of this summit could benefit ordinary Africans.
What the person you mentioned, the typical African wants is jobs rather than aid. And to have jobs, we need economic growth, we need open trade, we need investment. That's what people all across the developing world are looking for. And so we need to go beyond the fantastic achievements we've had in Millennium Development Goals, which have given people access to education and to health and to clean water. And we've made enormous progress. We haven't completely achieved them all. But to get to reach the last remaining Millennium Development Goals and to lift everybody out of poverty, we're going to need sustained economic growth, and that's going to need a different kind of cooperation.
The World Bank says that development assets need to go from billions to trillions. Does that strategy really work together? I mean, how do we even begin to create these jobs in Africa?
When the World Bank says that we need to get from billions to trillions, what they mean is that we have to use public resources to work together with the private sector. In the end, it's the private sector that will create those jobs, that will do most of that investment. What we can use public resources for is both to help create the conditions for that investment, create the conditions for that growth, and we can use it to protect the weakest and most vulnerable people who aren't benefiting immediately.
And what roles should emerging economies such as South Africa and Nigeria play to stimulate the growth of others?
The emerging economies are playing an enormous role in investing in developing countries, in South-South cooperation, transferring skills and ideas, and sometimes transferring foreign aid too. So we shouldn't think of the world anymore as rich countries, the Europeans and the Americans, giving money to poor countries in Africa, but as a spectrum of countries from those who developed first through the emerging economies right through to some of the poorest countries, which are unfortunately still recovering from conflict and very fragile, and for whom the prospects for economic growth are most distant.
And how do you think African countries or African economies can utilize their natural resources to sustain or to help them sustain these development goals?
It is a huge dilemma, and unfortunately there have been many cases in the past where countries, not just in Africa but across the world, have had natural resources that have been squandered by elites who have stolen the money or used it corruptly or wasted it. But there have also been fantastic examples, and Botswana is one of them, with its diamonds, that have used those resources well, invested in their people, and raised standard of living. And so what we need is accountable, responsive governments. We need transparency about the payments that are being made for these natural resources. We need those resources to be invested in people. We at the Centre for Global Development have a proposal called Oil to Cash, where we propose that countries in sub-Saharan Africa begin to exploit natural gas and oil along the coastline, and many countries in Africa are now doing that, that money should go into a fund that pays dividends to its people. And if the government wants to spend that on government projects, they should tax it from their citizens rather than get it directly from the sale of those natural resources. That would create a much more direct accountability relationship between governments and citizens. In the end, those natural resources belong to the citizens, not the government.
development economist Owen Bader. Now, during the opening day of the summit on Monday, the UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon called on world leaders to be flexible and find a compromise on how to fund sustainable development goals, or in short, SDGs. Well, that's because there are still some differences, like, for example, which countries are entitled to these development funds. Colette Wanjoy is following the summit in Addis Ababa and sent us this report.
According to the United Nations organization, the conference's host, 30 heads of government from different parts of the world are in attendance. The Prime Minister of Ethiopia, Haile Mariam Desalegn, who has been elected as the president of this third Financing for Development conference, says that post-2015, developing countries want more recognition globally.
We want to be self-reliant, and we want to finance our own development. We want to graduate. And it is with this in mind that I say, I hope this summit will see developed countries commit to spending at least 50% of their ODA on LDCs, as well as delivering on their commitment to spend at least 0.2% of the national income on LDCs.
September 2015 will see the end of the 15-year period of implementation of the United Nations Millennium Development Goals. New sustainable development goals are to be set to run for the next 15 years. These are expected to be more people-centered and provide more critical needs, for instance, in the fields of health and education, for citizens all over the world to better their lives. This conference is happening at a time when there is still no global agreement on the new set of sustainable development goals. To begin with, the number of goals being discussed at draft level are more than the original 8 Millennium Development Goals set by the United Nations. While some countries want a number of more specific goals added, others have raised concern that the proposed goals are too many and implementation may be a challenge. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon urges the Addis Ababa conference to try and agree more.
I urge world leaders and ministers gathered here this week to agree on outcome that is commensurate in ambition with the sustainable development goals. Exercise flexibility and compromise. Let us put aside what divides us and overcome narrow self-interest in favor of working together for the common well-being of humanity.
What is for certain is that the Addis Ababa Financing Conference must recognize the economic power of developing nations if any progress is to be made in the new anticipated development agenda, because the developing nations are growing at a fast rate. According to the World Bank, these countries carry nearly half of the world's savings and will account for almost two-thirds of them by 2030.
DW correspondent Coleta Wanjohi in Addis Ababa.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
Remembering a literature giant, Zimbabweans and Africans are mourning the death of Chinyere Hove. The Zimbabwean-born writer died in Norway, where he had been living in exile since 2001. Hove was a fierce critic of President Robert Mugabe. He won several awards for his works, including the Noma Award and German Africa Award for Freedom of Expression. Harare correspondent Columbus Mavunga visited the home of Hove and sent us this report.
Those are some of Hove's relatives, friends and fellow artists discussing different issues at his Harare home. They told me that they were not aware of the exact cause of his death, though he had liver problems. They said they hope that his body will be flown to Zimbabwe for burial later this week. Memori Chirere, an author, was among those present at Hove's home. He is the Secretary General of Zimbabwe Writers Association. He says he has memories of moments he shared with the late Chinyere Hove.
There are numerous memories, and at a moment like this, many float in the mind. Memories we had reading to one another as groups. You know, he was a writer and resident at the University of Zimbabwe in the early 90s when I was a student, and I was part of his group, and we would read to one another and so on and so forth, and that remains permanent on my mind.
Hove is one of the leading figures in post-colonial literature in Zimbabwe. He has won several awards for his telling work, which include the Zimbabwe Writing Award in 1987, the Noma Award for Publishing in Africa in 1989, and a German Africa Award for Freedom of Expression in 2001. Zimbabwe-based David Mungoshi is the chairman of Pan-African Writers Association. He tells me that just last week he had a chat online with Hove. He says he asked him to write a book following his visit to North Korea.
Very jovial, lots of humor. That's changed life for you. And then most recently, this G-Talk. I'm still hoping I can retrieve that because what he wrote for me, reminiscing about his visit to North Korea. It's so well done. I remember saying to him, this should be a book. Well, he laughed about it. He said, well, maybe you can do it. But I said, no, you are the best person to have done it. Mm-hmm. I think we'll see what we can do about that.
Since Hove left Zimbabwe in 2001 and until the time of his death in Norway, he had written many poems that mainly touched on separation. But it is his novel entitled Bones, which was published in 1988, that is among his best-known works. The book questions what difference the end of colonial rule in 1980 brought to Zimbabwe. The son of a local chief, Hove, was born in February 1956 and studied at the University of Zimbabwe and then at the University of South Africa. He later worked as a teacher and a journalist. He was a known critique of President Robert Mugabe's rule, an issue which led to his exile.
And that report was compiled by Columbus Mavunga in Harare. You're listening to Africa Link from DW Studios in Bonn, Germany.
Africa on the move.
If you live in South Africa and can't afford to go to the cinema, let me introduce you to Calvin Pahala. This young South African runs a mobile cinema. And I'm not talking about a van with a screen on its side or on top. Calvin carries his movie theatre in a backpack. That's right, a backpack that's all he needs and is on the move to bring the movies. This report by Dominic Eisenhardt is now presented by Renate Rengura.
It's showtime in a tavern in rural South Africa. 24-year-old Calvin Pala has unpacked his cinema kit to bring an action movie to his hometown. The film is projected onto a large tablecloth hanging just under the blank screen of a television set. A tablet computer has made Calvin Pala the master of entertainment in Siyabuswa. Calvin's day starts with an equipment check. He tucks away everything he needs into a small backpack.
In here I have a battery and then like two speakers, yeah, for the sound. And then this side I'm having like a projector and then all the cables. Everything is in place now, and then I'm ready like to hit the road. Okay.
The battery ensures that even a power outage can't spoil the show. Calvin is part of a pilot project. Long-distance buses carry movies to rural areas in shockproof boxes. The hard drives are taken to remote bus depots to allow Calvin and other mobile cinema operators to download films onto their tablets. Calvin has been in business for 2 months, earning little more than $8 a week.
The biggest challenge for me now is like I'm competing with the pirated movies. Yeah, people like are having the latest movies, but then they are pirated. So I cannot like screen the pirated movies to the community.
Marketing the business requires plenty of footwork and lots of explaining. Calvin goes from door to door touting the advantages of a community cinema in a world dominated by DVD players. People can select films from the catalogue on his tablet. Nombulelo Trudy Kwasho is a student. She says she appreciates Calvin's efforts. He proudly accepts the compliments.
There's no any cinema or some place to watch some movies.
Yeah, like mostly the taverns, soccer pitches, yeah. So, but then in terms of like the cinema, I think I'm the guy for them.
The film project has awakened Calvin's entrepreneurial spirit. He's also started a catering business with his mother to offer food during the shows so as to earn some extra cash.
That's my belief. If maybe like I do something different, I think I'm more like having chances of succeeding and like going through the same route as everyone.
A film, a drink, and Mama Pala's hot dogs. And the stage is set for the show to begin. On this occasion, Calvin has ordered a local crime movie for the people of Siyabuswa. Next, the young entrepreneur will be off to a screening at a school.
And that report was written by Dominique Eisenhardt. And from the movies, now let's turn to music. Zambian singer Pilato, who had been charged for allegedly defaming President Edgar Lungu with his lyrics, has been released. In the song, Pilato describes a guy called Lungu as being a drunkard who cannot govern. As Kathy Sikombe reports, the artist who is now free remains defiant.
Chama Fumba, known by his stage name as Pilato, appeared in a fully packed courtroom to hear the case against him. The Zambian state took him to court on defamation charges for his popular hit song Alungu Anabwera. Magistrate Arida Chulu read that the state has dropped all charges against Pilato on the grounds of insufficient evidence that the song defamed President Lungu. Pilato told journalists that he was happy with the decision just as much as when he composed the song.
Yes, I actually want to do an album now. I don't think anything can stop me. That's what I want to do and that's what I am meant to do. Interference is there and the government would want to silence anyone who doesn't sing songs for them.
The song Alungu Anabwera describes President Edgar Lungu as, in quote, a drunk. Previous leaders in Zambia are known for ordering the arrest of musicians who have released songs that are critical against them. The case against Pilato is President Lungu's first trial in using the country's defamation laws. The reason why President Lungu decided to drop all charges against Pilato is yet unknown, but Lusaka residents have hailed it as good for Zambia's democratic path.
I'm a fan of him. I enjoy his music, and it's good that he's released.
Yeah. Okay. Do you think there's an infringement on freedom of expression in Zambia?
Yeah, it's there. It's limited. It's really limited. But it's good that they're giving us a chance to express ourselves.
That's a good thing. Mm-hmm. At least it gives a chance for everybody to have a freedom of speech. They shouldn't be limited. Pilato is an example, rather.
The Media Institute of Southern Africa, which helped Pilato put a defense team together, says they are happy with the outcome, but express disappointment at the continued clampdown on freedom of expression. Helen Mwale is a spokesperson for the organization.
But you know, this is very worrying because we feel that the state is not out there to defend citizens when it comes to freedom of expression. We've noted that there has been an infringement on the part of freedom of expression. Every time a musician or citizen tries to express themselves freely, the government or political party or law enforcement officers would want to apply the clause that criminalizes freedom of expression in Zambia. And this borders on the enjoyment for all the citizens.
Pilato has not announced plans to pull his controversial song from the market, and President Lungu hasn't demanded he does so either. However, it does look like the president is set to hear more critical songs against him that might force him to use the criminal aspect of the defamation laws.
Kathy Sikombe reporting in Lusaka.
Making a difference.
There is a saying that goes like this: winners never quit and quitters never win. That's true for Sergei Ndekwe. He's a Rwandan entrepreneur who first worked as a taxi driver at the age of 18. A year later, he became a truck driver. And after that, the energetic young man began selling mobile phones. Eventually, he bundled all his energy and resources into a dairy business. But even here, there are challenges. This report by Jesko Johansen is now presented by Miriam Kaliza.
work never stops on what was Serge Ndekwe's first large project. The 35-year-old appears to be in a reflective mood as he stands on the spacious terrace of his Italian restaurant and looks out onto the lush green valley. He has invested several thousand euros into this business venture, which also includes a sports bar and a nightclub. The restaurant's many guests are treated to a splendid view of Rwanda's capital, Kigali. But at the beginning, Ndekwe experienced some very frightening moments.
We get a letter for suspension, definitely, from the district, Gasabo. So, you know, you worry a lot because you are not sure if you're going to make it, especially when you start a business like this, you don't even know if this business is going to work or not.
The business had barely opened when the district closed it down, saying there was too much noise and inadequate parking space for his customers. Once more, he was forced to reach deep into his pockets. It almost ruined him. Serge Ndekwe has come up with solutions.
There's two windows inside. The first, when we started, it was only one window. But with that problem, we agreed to, so you can see now it's double. So at least now we make sure, like, even people are here, there's some music. But it's not disturbing neighborhood.
A little later, Ndekwe visits his dairy plant. It, too, has seen its share of problems. Citing a lack of hygiene, the authorities shut the plant down twice, for months at a time. There were rumors that his business was an unwelcome competition for the state-run dairies. Ndekwe's products have made it to the shelves of shops throughout Rwanda. Wearing a white coat and speaking through a surgical mask, Ndekwe says that now is not the time to give up.
We got some reputation. It would be really not very smart now to close because it takes us 8 years to reach this level. I think if you give us another little effort for 1 year, this factory can become a medium factory.
He wants to expand production and modernize the plant. The dairy has a dozen employees, but Serge is aiming for twice as many. It's the only way to uphold strict production standards. Over 1,000 liters of milk are processed every day. The products range from fresh milk and yogurt to cheese. Ndekwe is certainly not giving up. In fact, a country club just outside Kigali is next. But hasn't he had enough after all the setbacks?
Of course it hurts. But then, on the other hand, I have a lot. I get a lot of support from the government, which push us again to continue to work like an entrepreneur.
And that is what this self-confident businessman keeps on doing as he creates jobs for others and helps shape Rwanda's future.
And that report was written by Jesco Johansson. Before I bring you a summary of our main stories, just to remind you that you can join Isaac Mugabe at 7:05 UTC, where he will bring you reactions following the change of military heads in Nigeria. And now a recap of what we have covered for you in this edition of Africa Link. UN Chief Ban Ki-moon has called on world leaders to show flexibility and compromise as they seek ways of financing development goals. And we've also been hearing reactions following the death of Zimbabwean author Chenjerai Hove and also the release of Zambian controversial singer Pilato. And that's all we had time for. To send us your comments and suggestions on the program, either via text message to country code 49 160 957 59510. That's 49 160 957 59510. Or an email to feedback.africa@dw.com or a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. And of course, for more news on the continent, just visit our website, dw.com/Africa. From me, Crispin Mwakideu, have a good day ahead.